I want to reread Psalm 23 as we read this morning in preparation for tonight's lesson. Psalm 23, I'll be reading from the New American Standard, so it may sound a little bit different than the customary King James Version that many of us have heard it spoken out of. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. For You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I don't know a funeral that I've ever been to that hasn't had this verse in it somewhere, whether it be from a family member or whether it's written somewhere on the obituary or someone simply says it or that's in the lesson from a preacher. It's usually somewhere at a funeral. And for really a great meaning, because the idea of it is to draw out the comfort and the strength that this passage speaks to us about. Not only the comfort and strength, but the peace and the rest that we can enjoy in being found faithful to God. And then it also encourages. But I don't want us to think about this psalm as the funeral psalm and that this is the only place it should be. And really, we should probably read it more often to really think about what David is really saying here in this psalm. Because David is really talking about probably a time in his life where he's dealing with something that is just overbearing and overwhelming. And so the reality is, it's not really a psalm about I've lived my life faithfully and now God's going to give me my reward. That's included. But rather a psalm that really speaks to where do I find my comfort? Where do I find my strength? Where do I find my peace? Where do I find all the blessings that I need in life that are from God? This is the psalm that really makes that great statement for us in talking about God. I'm not going to go through each and every verse of this psalm. In fact, we're going to go through very little of it tonight, probably. But what I would like to do is to talk a little bit about the first verse there as we think about the idea of God being a shepherd. And so you'll notice the words they are mentioned by David. The Lord, Jehovah, Yahweh, it's all the capital letters there in our English normally, but Yahweh is my shepherd, I shall not want. And so when we begin to think about David talking here, he begins this psalm by saying that God or the Lord, the Almighty One, the ever-existing One, our God, He is a shepherd to me. What's great about David actually saying that is not just in those words because they are inspired by David or by God and given to David to actually write, but rather because of his personal experience. I want us to go over and also read there in 1 Samuel chapter 16, and we're not going to read the whole section there, but certainly for the background information there of Samuel going to Bethlehem, and he's come to the house in Bethlehem to Jesse. He's been told to offer a sacrifice so that Saul doesn't want to kill him, for understanding that now God is going to anoint David as being king. And so that whole section there in the first 11 verses or so really talks about that. But I want us to really read verses 10 and 11 that kind of finish out the point there, as we consider the personal experience of David as he himself was also a shepherd. Thus Jesse made 7 of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen these." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Are these all the children?" And he said, "There remains yet the youngest, and behold, he is tending the sheep." Then Samuel said to Jesse, "Send him and bring him, for he will not sit down until he comes here." And so clearly this is that context where David is going to be anointed king by Samuel, and so we understand that. But just the small background information of David gives us the understanding that when he's in that time of distress and discouragement and life feels overwhelming, he says, guess what? The Lord is my shepherd. He is my shepherd, and I completely understand that. Because if we go on and we begin to read what happens in chapter 17, the great battle between Goliath and David, another verse that we could read, we're not going to read the whole chapter there, but drop down to verse 32 of that chapter, because if he continues on to talk about this idea of David himself being a shepherd, and who from personal experience would that not speak great encouragement for you and I as we think about David? Hey, he knows what it's like. He was a shepherd for his father, Jesse, and now he's describing God, because God wants us to see that we have a similar relationship with God and that our fellowship is with Him, and He is our ultimate shepherd there to lead us in this life. So drop down there to verse 32. The Bible says, David said to Saul, here he is. He's brought him before Saul, of course. He's wanting to go and fight Goliath. Remember, his brothers had essentially thought that he was just trying to look impressive in front of him and others, but of course it's not the case. And he says this, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Then Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. He has more fighting experience in battle than the entire time that you have even been alive. How do you think you're going to beat this guy? Well, it turns out that he grabbed his confidence. He had his trust in God based upon what he had to do as a shepherd boy trying to protect his sheep from dying. And so he begins to describe those events for us in detail there, at least enough to give us the understanding. In verse 35, I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. What is he talking about there? He's talking about a lamb from a bear's mouth there in verse 34. And then 36, he says, your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. Where do I gain my strength? Where do I gain my comfort? Where do I gain my peace? Where do I put my trust in? I put it in my shepherd, God. Why do I do that? Because I understand what it takes as a shepherd myself to protect the flock. And I had to deliver the lamb from the mouth of the lion and from the bear. And I did that because I know that my responsibility was to the sheep. Now, of course, on Sunday nights here, I'm trying to have lessons on us to better understand the role of Bruce and Leon and their responsibilities as shepherds here. But for us, I'm not attacking them, and I am no way trying to do that. What I'm trying to get us to understand is the spiritual significance in our leaders, but also the requirement on our part to help them do that. And so it's two-sided here as far as considering the idea of a shepherd. And so looking at various dictionaries as you describe the idea of a shepherd, by the way, even in the time of David, but even really in the first century, most of them would have carried what was called a scrip. And this was made of goatskin. And so you can imagine this bag that was made of goatskin. And they would normally take two legs of an animal that they killed and actually use them as kind of like sticks that they would tie this thing to that so they could carry it. And within that satchel or that bag, they would put their food and other various things in it. And they would, of course, carry that with them as they were doing their service as shepherding the flock. But for safety reasons, they would also carry with them a slingshot, of course. That's what David used to actually kill Goliath. And then, of course, taking the head and cutting it off, and that we can talk about that later. But he used that sling because he was so customarily used to using it to protect his sheep. That was a weapon that he relied upon to protect them. And then the description is that he also has a rod and a staff, the staff being the instrument to kind of pull them back if they tried to be stubborn and get away. And the staff was just something he carried to help him walk while he was out in nature. And so he had all these tools in his arsenal so that he could be the best shepherd that he could be for his sheep as he was giving his responsibility. And you know, as you think about that, as you think about that great psalm there, and the Lord is my shepherd, Peter also has something to say about that, only he doesn't call God the shepherd in his context. He really pinpoints it to just one person, the person that really matters for you and I, and that's Christ. In 1 Peter chapter 5, as Peter is beginning to discuss the eldership, because he himself was one of the shepherds at the congregation that he was over, he says, therefore, in verse 1 of 1 Peter 5, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, not yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, of course the sheep there, but proving to be an example to the flock. And so you can see a lot of different responsibilities just within that list that are given to shepherds of the church. But then verse 4, he concludes by saying, "And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory." And so certainly as Peter is writing that lesson from the Holy Spirit, he certainly has in mind the responsibility of elders of a local congregation, but ultimately brings it around to the point that they don't need to forget, and you and I as Christians don't need to forget, that we also have a chief shepherd that's going to return. We have Jesus Christ Himself, and He's going to return because He is ultimately the shepherd of the church. I want us to go over as well and read another familiar account in John chapter 10. And this one's going to be a little bit lengthier, but there are a number of points that can be drawn from it as we think about the significance of Jesus being our chief shepherd and God being our shepherd, as far as what David said there in Psalm 23 and verse 1. And so follow with me, if you will, in John chapter 10 there, and beginning in verse 1. We're not going to read the whole chapter. It is 42 verses, but a few of the verses here, because Jesus has an important lesson here as it pertains to shepherds of a church and then ultimately the sheep and that relationship that needs to happen between them. So he says here in verse 1, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber." You realize where he's gathering this from is he's gathering it from the sheepfolds that would have been built during that time out in the field. They actually would have made them constructed out of primarily stone and built them up high with four walls. It would have been like a rectangle. It would have made the length longer on two sides and a little bit shorter on the end. They would have made a door to get in, and they wouldn't have had a top, so it would have been left open to the open sky. And then on top of that, once they got done with it, they would put thorns all the way at thorn bushes and just put them so close together that if a thief tried to climb up, he would have a pretty good, nice time fighting with the thorn bushes that were there. And so it was to detract thieves and robbers. And so Jesus is pulling from that concept that he knows that a lot of those shepherds would have realized and saying, "Look, if you're going to be one of those thieves who tries to get in and steal one of these sheep, you're not going to be able to do it. You're just a thief and a robber." And he's making the point then, but he who enters by the door, you see, they would have hired an actual shepherd by the door, by the way. So a lot, 10 shepherds would have put all their flock into this sheepfold for the night to protect them from wolves and various things. And they would have just kept one guy at the door that basically would have slept there and protected the sheep from getting in and out. And so he was there for the watch. It was his responsibility then to keep them safe, to make sure no thieves were trying to climb in, and then to also keep them from getting out and to wander off. And so there was that huge responsibility, and Jesus is playing upon that first century idea. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. He's the one that's going to enter to help the sheep if they need it. "To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." Again, going back to that sheepfold concept that we now understand, that although one guy would have been guarding the door, obviously 9, 10, or even more shepherds would have had some of their sheep in there. But all they had to do was come into that sheepfold and, of course, call out, and those sheep that were his would actually come to him because they knew who he was. They had that relationship. The same thing can be said of Leon and Duncan as it pertains to the sheep here. Do they have that relationship built with each Christian that they can go and talk to them about their problems and all those sorts of things? You see, that's an important aspect of shepherds. I'm not suggesting that they all need to have psychiatry degrees and be focused in psychology, but one of the responsibilities is for those shepherds to actually be able to speak to one of us and take us aside and be able to talk to us and try to help us through a problem or to help give us hope. That's the responsibility. And so that's included in being a shepherd for God. And so what Jesus is doing here is he's explaining that through his own life and his own example and what it really takes to be the good shepherd that he says he is for you and I. "To him the doorkeeper opens and the sheep hear his voice." And then in verse 4, "When he puts forth all of his own, he goes ahead of them and the sheep follow him because they know his voice." And so there's that relationship. "A stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. And so a lot of times they would hire a porter or someone that would, if they couldn't go and take care of their sheep for the day, maybe they had a family member die and so they had to take care of business, they would hire somebody. So it was actually an occupation in the first century to hire a shepherd, you would say, but they didn't really know the sheep. And so they would fulfill their duty as a shepherd, but it wouldn't be to the extent of the shepherd that actually owned his specific sheep. And so there was this understanding then that they wouldn't respond to that person like they would their actual shepherd that took care of them and knows them really well. So drop down to verse 7. So Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep." And so he then uses a parable here then to discuss how the sheepfold here is going to be really a picture of the church. And all the sheep that enter in are going to be Christians. And so that's what he's relating to you and I today. "All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door, and if anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture." And of course, you can see the connection there to Psalm 23, where he's discussing there that he leads us out to those green pastures. The idea is that he feeds us, he gives us the things that we need, he takes us behind the quiet waters when we're in fear or need to have a relaxation or to have that fear taken away. You set a sheep at that time by the quiet waters, and that would have calmed them. And so it's bringing that calm, of course, to the sheep. And so you can see the parallel there, I believe, in what David said and what Jesus is teaching us here. Verse 10, not too many verses in this text. "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and is not concerned about the sheep." Right? He's only getting paid. It's not really his sheep that he doesn't care so much as far as that. He hasn't built the relationship with the sheep to really care. He just wants paid. "I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, I lay down my life for the sheep." And then I'll close with verse 16 on this particular section. I have other sheep, which are not of this fold." Again, he's talking about Gentiles, because remember, he's speaking to Jews. "I must bring them also, that they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock," that's the church, "with one shepherd." He's the chief shepherd. He's the shepherd over the church as far as being the head of it. And so there we have that relationship that we have to Christ. We are the sheep. All of us are sheep in that sense, and Christ is the head. But then, of course, he's appointed shepherds of the church to lead the flock for you and for I. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, many have tried to twist this verse to talk about something other than what it really means. And in verse 17, as you read it within the context, he's clearly talking about shepherds of the church. I don't know how you would apply this to anyone else. If you could try to apply it even to leaders of a country, it wouldn't make sense if you just read the entire verse. But this is the one that helped us begin to understand not only the responsibility of a shepherd, but then the sheep as well. And so something that is important as we think about the great shepherd Christ, as we think about David saying, "The Lord is my shepherd," and we begin to think about those qualities and those characteristics and those responsibilities, this is one that really sticks out to me. "Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account." Now, I want you to realize what that's saying there. That's saying that Leon and Bruce are going to have to give an account for every sheep that they've led over. They're going to have to give an account for, did they do everything in their power according to what the responsibilities of a shepherd are? God's going to bring that into account on them. And the reason that it says right after that is the reason why we should help them to serve as a shepherd and to fulfill their responsibilities. "Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you." We need to make their responsibility as an eldership and shepherds easier, not more difficult. And so in those areas of judgment where there's always division and always problems, it seems, in the church, The proper attitude of a sheep is that if it is a matter of judgment and it's not changing Scripture, then I'm simply going to submit, even if I don't agree with the decision. You see, that's the weird thing I think we don't discuss enough in the church. I don't have to agree with every single decision that the elders make, but I do have to submit. You know, I may disagree with maybe a decision they make. That doesn't mean it's wrong. Doesn't mean it's right, right? It's only right if it's my choice, right? But I need to submit to it because they're the ones giving an account to make sure that they're doing their job right. And that's really what we should think. It is a job. That's why you have some elders who are paid to do it. They quit their job and they get paid if the congregation has the money to do it, because it does take a full-time work of effort in the life of an elder. And so you can see why it would. We have a responsibility then as a sheep as well. So there's a nice balance here, as we might say, of a shepherd and a sheep. To help that be a healthy relationship. And so if anything we take from that verse, it should be that at the very least that there needs to be that recognition of how serious it is, whether it be the shepherd themselves, Bruce and Leon, or the sheep as well, to understand what's going on, and that I could potentially cause problems to where he's giving an account for my soul, and he has to make sure he has his responsibilities laid out in doing them so that he doesn't have to give an account before God on Judgment Day. And you could see the problem there. So those are the things that we need to consider. Now, with that in mind, I don't know if I have time for all this. Unless you want to be here for another hour, if you agree with that, right? I'm not going to go through all these, but I did want to point out a couple of things that relate to the responsibility of a shepherd, but from the sheep's perspective. So first off, sheep must be free from fear. Now, how in the world does a shepherd help with that? That I'm supposed to be free from fear. I'm not talking about the fear of sin and that sin causes us to be separated from God for eternity. Of course, people should become feared in the fact that God's going to punish us, of course, for their sins. But I'm more or less talking about the ideas of when something's wrong in my life, or for example, any shepherd here for that matter, if there's really something wrong, maybe it's something that's a weakness and could potentially cause them their salvation, how are Bruce and Leon reacting to that specific sheep? Now, what I have in mind here as we think about casting out fear is that we shouldn't have fear of wondering if they are going to actually help us, if they're going to give us what I might like to call security in our salvation. Now, I know salvation is not guaranteed, but what I'm talking about is to give us hope. Are they giving us hope? Are they give? You know, maybe it might be looked at as a, since I like football and sports, but a sports analogy, a pep talk. But that's kind of the idea here for a shepherd. Is there a sheep there that's having a weakness that they really just need to talk to and give them some hope and try to give them some strength? Are they doing that? You see, that's required of the shepherd. And so we could see that as other sheep and like, hey, this person is struggling with this particular thing. Are they going to them and really talking with them? You know, that'll cast out my fear of if I'm in a situation, are they going to come to me in a loving way? Are they going to come to me and visit at my home? Are they going to be frank but gentle in speaking to me if it is something that I need to correct? Are they going to do that? That is the shepherd's responsibility. And I want to emphasize that. A shepherd isn't to have a proxy. Now, I know with our system today, the preacher is the pastor and he's doing everything, but this is a shepherd's responsibility. It's not done by proxy, meaning he has to do it himself. And so it'll cast out all that fear and a lot of problems that might rise if we see that in our own sheep. So you could see the responsibility there that needs to really be impressed upon the shepherds as far as that is concerned. Now, should all of us be encouraging one another? And of course, there's a general principle there that we should always be doing that. But it takes on a special function for the shepherds here and making sure that they do that. Another thing that sheep must be free of is not just fear, but also what I'd like to label here as friction. Now, since I've been here, we haven't had, issues that might come up with us. Is Jesse having a problem with Brandon? Is there something behind the scenes going on? And how do we take care of that then? Well, having shepherds, right? That's how we're going to handle this situation. How do shepherds handle those situations? I'll give you the answer because it's in the qualifications, wisdom. It's wisdom, using the wisdom and judgment that they've had from their life experience and from dealing with different issues. And so, for example, if Brandon and I had an issue, would the elders say, well, we're going to get you in a meeting and see if you guys will just start yelling at one another. Maybe that'll solve it. Well, you know our personalities, right? Or you should, because you know us as the sheep. Well, maybe that's not the best method. Maybe, Leon, you go talk to Jesse. I'll go talk to Brandon because he's my son. We'll talk to them separately and kind of try to sort this thing out. All that is on the responsibility. It's not the preacher's job because we pay him. It's the shepherd's responsibility. And so you can see, though, that's why we need to look to them as our shepherd, just like we look at God as our shepherd over our church. There's that relationship as far as the responsibility and the requirements there that are really on the shepherd of the church. And so we could go on in speaking about that. But certainly the idea is that elders are supposed to try to help maintain a peaceful atmosphere. You know, maybe there is a difference in opinion on a matter of opinion area. Is there problems coming from that? And hey, let's keep peace. That's part of that responsibility as well. Another thing, and probably the most obvious for most of us, is that sheep must be free from pests. Now, this is, the more obvious one. When we talk about pests, I'm talking about false teachers. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, we're going to go get a Baptist preacher to come in here and start preaching to us. But as far as keeping pests out, for example, what if somebody here were to get a book that was teaching something false, and they bought a bunch of copies of that thing, and they start handing it out here to different people? Do you think the shepherds should get involved in that? Absolutely. In fact, they should probably be reading that book. And I think the responsibility is this. If that book's being handed out, as the example would go, this is obviously not in every case, but as this example to keep the pest out, they should be coming up here from the pulpit and giving the reasons why that book is false and why these are false doctrines to protect us. Because I think in a lot of it is, well, we're all mature Christians. We're not going to listen to, we'll see, will we? You see, and so that brings another responsibility upon the shepherds to point out why this book would be false, what things are wrong about it, and this is why we don't need to read it, and go from there. And so again, that's the idea of the sheep being free from pests. And so that would be one example that would be internal, of course. And then the last one here I have for tonight is that sheep must be free from hunger. And so obviously the hunger there we're talking about is the spiritual diet that we have. It is a shepherd's responsibility, obviously, to make sure I'm preaching the truth. But do you realize that extends to the Bible class teachers? That extends to anyone who's in a teaching capacity. And not only to see, okay, they teach truth, but what's being taught in this Bible class? Are they teaching from a book? What's in that book? You see, all those things are the responsibilities of the shepherds to really check out and see, okay, this book is approved. It doesn't have any false teaching in it. Go ahead and teach in your class. You don't have to be sitting in there and listening to everyone, but hey, at least be aware of, hey, what's going on in that classroom so that I know what kind of stuff is going on in there. That's, again, the responsibility of shepherds of a congregation. And I would even extend that to who's teaching. Are they apt to teach? One of my biggest problems I ran into was actually at Branson, and I talked to one of the shepherds about it because I was getting some information from the youth that I was teaching. And I asked them specifically, there were three in that class, and I said, how were your previous teachers teaching? Did they seem prepared? No. And two of them were fathers of the two children that were in that class. They wouldn't prepare. They wouldn't study. They don't need to be teaching in the Bible class. It's that simple. And I brought that before the elders, and finally he took over the class and he said, you know, you're right. If they're not going to be prepared to study and actually teach the Bible, then they don't need to be teaching. And that's exactly the problem, I think, in the church that we're facing over the last 30 years, is a bunch of people are appointed to teach. They don't prepare. They don't study. They just come up, they show up with whatever book they're going through and just try to answer a bunch of questions and think that's going to get it done. I think that's the problem. And so it's, again, and don't miss the point here, it's the shepherd's responsibility to make sure the Bible class teachers are prepared, are actually wanting to teach and not just go downstairs and throw something random lesson at them. That's important. We're talking about a generation of kids who are going to come up, if they have that kind of garbage teaching, that they're not going to remain faithful. They're not going to know much Bible, let alone saying, hey, take over later and you teach someday. So you could see the drastic effect it'll have on that generation. And again, I'm not attacking our elders, but I'm trying to get us to understand how serious this responsibility is for them, but for us as sheep to make that easier on them so that we can have that better relationship as the congregation here. So that's what I want us to think about. As a shepherd or as a sheep, our relationship to one another is important, and certainly we can learn from the Scriptures to help be better Christians every single day. And so with that in mind, I want to offer up the invitation. As a child of God, we realize that we do fall short. However, that is not an excuse for sin, and we do have a command to bring our sin before God and to ask Him to forgive us as we have that penitent heart, as we're willing to turn away from those things. God does forgive us and continue to wash us in the blood of the Lamb. That's the great thing about the grace and long-suffering of God. He gives us that every single day of our lives. And so if there's any need this evening, please come to the front while we stand and praise God together.
Your Lord's breath, ye.